Welcome aboard, you people.
Happy Monday, kind of. A lot to absorb on this Monday if you think about what's going on in the world and in Chicago. It's been a troubling weekend.
You know, I don't even know where to begin this because I covered Columbine.
Mm-hmm.
I covered the Murrah Federal Building when it happened for both a local radio station here and ABC News. Nothing has changed. You know, in the 25 years since, nothing has changed. There isn't a sense that, as a matter of fact, things have kind of gotten worse. And you keep thinking that a new generation is going to come up and they're going to see this world differently and they're not going to be as incited by differential as earlier generations were. Because we always like to forgive people, you know, our parents or grandparents or great-grandparents' age who, you know, see the world differently and they see it in segregated terms and they see it in us versus them and tribe. And we thought, well, that's down. That's the way it was. And then after World War II, because of how hatred had torn down the vast majority of Europe and most of Asia, ethnic and national hatreds boiled over and created this apocalypse in which, when you take in total, 50 million people died. And now we thought, okay, middle part of the century, see what we're going to do with a more open-minded way of looking at things and how ethnic hatreds and genocide and all those things are wrong. Then we sort of forgot about it. We forgot about it in Southeast Asia when that was going on with Pol Pot. We forgot it. When it happened in other parts of the world, we just didn't think about it. And now we're back in a posture like we were 100 years ago, in which people are hating on each other in the United States of America based on their ethnicity, based on their religion, based on their political philosophy, and willing to kill in mass numbers. Now, I happen to think that there's some mental illness here, too. Obviously, the Dayton situation seems to clearly be mental illness. But mental illness with a guy who was able to get a hold of an AR.
Both of them legally obtained their weapons. And then you look at the Dayton shooting. We had a Dayton shooting in Chicago this weekend. If you look at the death toll here on our streets, 7 killed, 58 wounded from gunfire.
Right. 58 people shot. Yeah.
58 people shot. And it is easier for us to identify with people walking into a Walmart. Maybe it's easier to identify with someone just at a bar, and that could have been you. That could have been you or me or anybody we know. But unless you grow up in certain neighborhoods in Chicago, where you're continually terrorized by gun violence, but it doesn't make it any less so, and it doesn't make it any less concerning.
And the reality is that these politicians are putzes. I mean, every single one of them up and down the line. And because no one wants to take on the reality of this. The reality of this is that weapons like the AK and the AR should be specifically licensed. We used to do it. We could do it again. This is not an infringement of the Second Amendment. If you want to own one of those, you have to have a legitimate reason to have to own one of those, or you have to have a license and go through some sort of training and background check in order to do that at a federal level. That's easy to do.
It seems like it would be very easy to get something like that done.
So if you're Donald Trump Jr. and you want to have one, you can come up with a reason that you need to have it, and you go through a whole process to do it. Not you just go to the gun shop and buy it, because it's easy. You can do it. You can go to the gun shop and buy an AR, an AK, whatever it is, style weapon, and you can walk out after your background check in Illinois. You know, they talk about, oh, Illinois, you know, there's all these states that's not allowed. Well, it's allowed here. I know it firsthand. And in Indiana and in Ohio, you know, in Ohio, it's open carry, too. We learned that on our way into the Cleveland Republican convention. And they were like people that were showing up with their AKs and their ARs and bandoliers around their, you know, around their chests.
And that's okay.
As part of a protest. And what were they going to do about it? And in Texas, it's open carry as well. And so there isn't it there that And it's one thing, and again, I'm not forgiving handguns, because the vast majority of the shootings in Chicago are handgun shootings. But you do every once in a while, you get a long gun shooting, and every once in a while you do get this type of weapon used in a gunfight. I know two Chicago police officers who were injured. Thank God they survived their injuries in a gun battle with a guy with an AR.
Right. Officers will often say that they feel outgunned on the streets because the gang members do have these weapons. They're not always involved in shootings, but they're available to them, just like they're available to 21-year-olds in Dayton, and they use them. And good luck if you're a police officer who don't have the proper protection vest on or has to walk into the middle of that to try to help people. It's beyond concerning.
The first part of this is solvable. That is solvable. And nobody wants to stand up and do it because everybody's afraid of the NRA. And even though the NRA is more, I think it's weakened, certainly from a political standpoint, than it was 10 years ago, right? There's been scandal within the NRA. There's all kinds of goofy things that right. go on. There's self-dealing. Mm-hmm. There are problems internally in the organization of the NRA. But that really isn't what the politicians are afraid of. Yes, they're afraid that the NRA is going to throw money behind them and they're going to get primaried. Congressmen are scared to death. You got a lot of Democratic congressmen who go along with the NRA because they know that they live in those kinds of they live and work in those kinds of districts. They represent those districts that could be flipped going the other way if the NRA ran somebody who said that, this guy's trying to grab your guns, because that's the whole thing. Gun grabber. And I just think that there has to be a greater limitation on that style of weapon. Because in a handgun, with the most commonly purchased handguns now, you can put 15 rounds in them, 16, one in the chamber. Right? That's a lot. But it's not a lot compared to 30 or 50 or 100. Or a flip 60, which is where you tape the two together and you have 30 and then 30, and it takes a second to make the change. I mean, it is not at all reasonable for us not to put some level of investigation into those people buying those weapons, because they are weapons of mass destruction. Because when you can get off 41 rounds in 22 seconds, which is what the guy in Dayton did, 41 rounds in 22 seconds before he was taken out.
Police got to him in less than a minute.
In 22 seconds they got to him. From his first shot to them shooting was 22 seconds. 41 rounds he got off.
Yeah.
Of high velocity high velocity rounds, which are, with the bullet of that round, it's a 22. It's not that gigantic, but what it does, when it comes out of the barrel, it starts flipping. And when it goes into its victim, it doesn't just go into a victim. There were victims in Dayton that were shot through other people.
Yeah.
And that is that when you stop, that thing is designed to kill people in short and medium range, in some cases long range. It's designed as a weapon of war.
And as many people as quickly as possible.
Right.
Which
exactly. And they're not fully automatic, and they don't really have to be. If you listen to the audio of the Dayton shooting, you know that even though that was not a fully automatic weapon, I've shot those rifles before. And
yeah.
They are, and you can get through that very quickly. You can get through a magazine of 30 rounds in under 30 seconds easily. So clearly, and so this is a this is just not a I'm not saying you don't sell them. I'm not even saying take them off the market. I'm saying when you sell them, they have to be sold from licensed dealers to licensed individuals. Is that a crazy place to start? I don't think so. Ben Bradley will tell me if it's a crazy place to start coming up in just a moment. But first, let's check in with Kim Gordon, who's coming up at the bottom of the hour.
Road checkmate has new meaning at the Cook County Jail.
Ben Bradley joins us right now on the Super Celebrity Satellite.
Hi, Ben.
Hi. Good to be back with you after a week of vacation.
Yes. For you, not for us. We're very busy around mm-hmm. here. All right. Okay, so, we're decrying all the stuff that's going on mm-hmm. in El Paso and in Dayton, Ohio. But in Chicago, 58 people were shot over the weekend. 58.
And seven of them were killed.
Right.
And I thought, I had the same thought as the news trickled in over the weekend that, you know, if you just look at it from sheer numbers, not motivation, you know, this is Chicago in three bad summer weekends. The number of people we saw die in El Paso and Dayton, and yet there does not seem to be a national emergency around that. Not that I would contend that there is a national emergency surrounding the lawmakers' response to this latest series of mass shootings, because I think it already feels like the same cycle, right? Wash, rinse, repeat.
And we have the same arguments. Nothing ever gets done. There's thoughts and prayers. Mm-hmm. It's a lovely sentiment. It's meaningless. Because thoughts and prayers aren't going to do anything. In this, you can pray for the soul of the lost and for comfort for the family. I get that. That's a common thing. We should be doing that every day anyway. The idea that we're going to think about this is not enough. The idea that there are reasonable solutions that do not infringe upon the Second Amendment, that do not infringe upon the rights of people to be... can't buy a bazooka, right? You can't buy a 50 caliber.
True.
Right?
Nope, you can't buy a rocket launcher.
Right. But let's just go back to, because people go, well, it's a firearm differential. Well, you can't go buy a 50 caliber machine gun and turn it into a single shot.
No, and put
machine
it back
gun.
Yeah, put
right.
it on the back of your Jeep Wrangler and drive around.
Right.
Yeah.
You can't do it. And there's a reason you can't do it. And these weapons are a lot, they're generally not used for hunting, they're used for self defense, they're used for target, they're used for fun. Mm-hmm. They're fun. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, I freely admit that I have fired these weapons.
As have I.
I have too. I have been. I've been around them a lot, and I understand the power of them, and I think most gun owners understand the power of them,
and most gun owners respect the power of them.
Right, and I would imagine that most gun owners wouldn't mind. Especially, I mean, in Illinois, you got to have a license to do all of this anyway, mm-hmm. right? If you want to buy ammunition, buy a gun, handle certain guns, you got to have a FOID card. If you want to be in possession of a firearm, you have to have a FOID card and or concealed carry, depending on what you want to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have to go through all of this here anyway.
Yeah, I think some of the other ideas that are being talked about today in the wake of the mass shootings, not the Chicago shootings, but in the wake of those, are the universal background checks, yet again, saying, hey, you shouldn't be able to transfer a gun without doing some sort of background check or waiting 10-day period to allow authorities to do that. And then the red flag laws, where your family members or police or law enforcement individual can report that you need to be investigated, restrict your ability to buy a weapon or remove the weapons from your home and remove the weapons from your home until there's been an investigation. I know there's been some pushback about that mm-hmm. as well, but that seems to be gaining a lot of traction now, too, to try to say, hey, in something like 40% of these cases, there were people within the inner circle of these individuals who committed mass shootings that were able to say, I think there's a problem here. There are warning signs here before the shooting. In one or two of them, the families tried to get the weapons out of their hands beforehand, mm-hmm. but couldn't.
But at the same time, as we've seen after the Aurora workplace shooting in Illinois several months back, there are such huge flaws in the systems that are already in place to police guns and gun ownership in Illinois. I mean, you know, in Illinois, you lose your FOID card because of a domestic violence incident. No one was actually tracking whether or not you gave up your gun.
Right.
And
yeah.
So, you know, the system itself is flawed, but I don't know that the...
Well, the system's designed to be intentionally weak anyway.
Well, exactly.
When the lawmakers
the
are
law
writing it...
The law says you cannot maintain a national computer database of who has a gun, that is, you know, and so you have ATF agents whenever there's a shooting like this going, you know, through some sort of gigantic filing cabinet that I imagine is housed inside a mountain someplace, mm-hmm. you know, and pulling out a dusty folder to trace a gun. You're right. That is a system that is intentionally flawed.
Right. It's intentionally flawed because the idea here, the people who are worried about getting noticed with this, you got people who are very worried about their own civil liberties, you know, their right to own mm-hmm. a gun and protect
sure.
themselves and their family and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got people who are just straight nutcases and paranoid. And then you've got the gun manufacturers and ammunition manufacturers, you know, who want to encourage you to go out and target shoot and hunt and do the rest of this stuff. That they don't want any more restriction on their business than they already have.
No, and they've successfully lobbied for limits on the ability to sue gun manufacturers. But this is a uniquely American problem. We're living in this weird vacuum, and I imagine people overseas, every time this happens, look at it and say, well, gosh, you know, we can tell you what's different here versus there. And I'm not advocating for one side or the other. It's just we're not quite as clueless as this cycle would seem to suggest as to the reasons why this happens, right?
Right.
Like, Europe's got video games, violent video games.
Right.
They've got mental health issues.
They have people who hate and people who are against other types of people.
It is access. It is clearly access. And, yes, you do have knife attacks. People go, well, there'll be a knife attack. You know, I'm going to tell you something right now. You're not going to hit 40 people.
Yeah, in Dayton,
Ohio, 22 seconds with a knife attack.
Dead in under 30 seconds.
Yes,
with a knife.
It's just not going to happen.
Right.
And they go, well, yes, it is. All right. Well, good luck on that argument. All right. I want to play some audio for you.
Yep.
It's disturbing audio. This is the sound of the weekend. Is not Dayton. That is not El Paso. That is 18th and Kedvale here in Chicago.
This weekend.
And it's also not uncommon in Chicago.
No.
So much so the police spokesperson tweeted out that audio to point out the conditions that some people are living in. I'm reading Alex Kotlowitz's new book, and he makes the point that, you know, how does this happen? How do people turn to violence? Well, you know, it's not post-traumatic stress disorder, he says. This is people currently living in this situation. And imagine if you had witnessed the shooting of a friend a year ago, or, you know, had lost a loved one, mm-hmm. and you're inside your house or out on your porch or riding your bike, and you hear that sound from
constantly.
A block away again and again and again.
Right. It's unbelievable. I mean, Mount Sinai Hospital had to be temporarily shut down to deal with the gunshot victims.
Yeah, well, in hospitals with some common occurrence go on bypass on these busy summer weekends because their emergency rooms just get so overwhelmed.
With shooting victims.
Yep.
All right.
Yep.
Puts it all in perspective.
It does.
All right. Ben, thank you very much. We'll see you on the WGN-TV News at 4, 5, 6, 9, and 10.
See you then.
Thank you, sir. Right now, Kim Gordon's got the WGN News in 2 minutes. Pro Con Show with Anna DeBlantis on 720 WGN. All right. We'll take you to Dayton right now, where our own Ryan Burrow is standing by. And on the street there, you're in the Oregon district, I'm assuming. Is that correct?
Yeah. Right where this shooting took place. It's reopened. People are walking by. It doesn't seem like a normal day here. Actually, Mondays, a lot of these stores are closed. They usually take Sunday and Monday off. That's kind of their weekend. But a lot of the stores decided to open today as more and more people have come by. They're bringing flowers, wreaths, balloons, and dropping them at the site, especially in front of that bar where the final shots rang out, killing the gunman. There's quite a bit of flowers and memorials and notes and things like that that have been left there. And of course, the media is staked out right across the street. So not necessarily a normal day. They're trying to get back to business as normal, but it's going to be hard to do that.
There was we mentioned this earlier on the show, Ryan, that the gunman's own sister was killed as part of the shooting. Is there any word from law enforcement about whether that was intentional? And I know his motives seem to be something we haven't heard much about, and perhaps it's just we don't know that much at this point.
You know, it's it's really weird because we know a ton of information about this person, 24-year-old Connor Betts. We know what high school he went to. We know, about traffic citations he's received. We knew his name within 12 hours of this shooting. Mm-hmm. And we also knew the names of the 9 victims that he took down, and among them being his sister. The only thing they've ruled out at this point, and really they haven't ruled out anything, but they do not believe that racism played a role in this specific shooting. Of the victims, they were white, they were black, they were male, they were female, they were 22 years old to 57 years old. They think once he made those initial shots, killing his sister and wounding a person who they were with, he just kind of started opening fire on anyone that was around. Now, we know that he arrived here with that companion and his sister on Saturday night, and at some point they separated from each other. And we know that he had all of this stuff with him. He had a mask. We know that he had a bulletproof vest. We know that he had 2 guns with him, and one of them was that 223 caliber assault style rifle that was used in this attack. We don't know if his sister and this companion knew about those weapons. It doesn't sound in that first interview as though the companion who they were with knew. But for some reason, when he came out of that alley and started firing, those were the first 2 that were shot. And we asked the police chief about that today. Is it possible in this very populated area of people that it just so happens that it was his sister and this companion and he didn't notice? Or did he open fire on them knowing who they were and then just continue the shooting rampage beyond? That's something that they're still trying to get a grasp on at this mm-hmm. point.
They don't have a sense of what his relationship with his sister was like?
No, not well, and unfortunately, he's dead, his sister's dead. Now you've got 2 parents that are dealing with this. They are having conversations, but at this point, they haven't really come up with anything that would indicate, was there a fight beforehand? Did they not get along? We've seen some Facebook or social media pictures with them both smiling in it, but what can you get from that?
Yeah,
that doesn't really say anything.
It's interesting that the police chief in the press conference earlier today was warning the media not to speculate too much about the information that we have about this guy from high school, from 8-10 years ago.
Right.
When
very
he was
disturbing.
Taken off a bus because he had a kill list and he had a rape list for the women and their girls.
He was suspended from school, and then there were specific classmates mentioned who said they were just horrified and scared by what he had said, how detailed it was, what he wanted to do to them.
Yeah, but that being said, no real criminal behavior as an adult, and that's what they initially took a look at, some traffic violations, things like that, but nothing that flagged the police, hey, this is a potential person who could be an issue for us. So it seemingly took them by surprise, not only here in Dayton, but even in his hometown of Bellbrook, about 15 minutes away.
Hmm. Yeah. All right, thank you very much. Appreciate it, Ryan. I'll check back with you. Aaron or Ryan Burrow, who is in Dayton with us right now. Joining us on the phone is Aaron Katursky from ABC News. And the story today, Aaron, is about the FBI and their decision. You heard the president earlier today talk about, you know, he's been in consultation with people in the Justice Department about what to do here. And the FBI says that they may have some ideas that they'd like to throw out that might make it easier to be able to flag some of these people on the internet.
Well, the FBI is really concerned about copycats. They think that one attack begets another. It doesn't matter if the ideologies match. If they don't match, if the shooters have exactly the same thoughts, they are really worried that just the act itself is enough to trigger another. And they're concerned about online conspiracy theories, which have found amplification because of social media, a way to inject themselves into the mainstream of political thought. And they're concerned that that's giving license to people prone to violence to act out.
Is there evidence that both of the gunmen mention something about it on social media prior to it? I think the El Paso one did. Is that right?
Well, in El Paso, they're looking, of course, at the essay, the screed that was posted online in the minutes before the attack, and they're concerned that, you know, that may have been yet another mass shooting that was predicted or at least talked about on 8chan. Mm-hmm. There's at least 3 of those recently. And the authorities say that this kind of stuff, when it goes unchecked, is a real problem because it isn't just the one. They think this kind of stuff is inspiring a lot of different people.
Hmm. And it's unclear, obviously, if one led to the other on Saturday. I don't think we'll ever know the answer to that, whether the situation in El Paso was something that lit up this already troubled guy to decide he was going to take those weapons to that bar district in Dayton and dispatch a bunch of people.
Well, that's right, and that's precisely the thing that they're concerned about. Even though it looks like they may be from the opposite political spectrum, that there may not be a racial bias in Dayton like there is in El Paso, that it still may be influential. And you know, it goes to our coverage, of course, but it also speaks to a larger problem.
But what can be done? I mean, if you see something that looks disturbing or sounds disturbing on some website and some posting, a manifesto or someone expressing some sort of interest in, God forbid, killing others, I mean, you report that to the FBI? Can the FBI quickly get in front of that? In this case, it sounded like there wasn't that much time.
Well, I'm not sure if they can get in front of it or not. I mean, look, we've come to learn that in El Paso, the guy cased the joint, saw what he needed to see inside the Walmart, and then opened fire, and it took a long time for police to get hold of that. In Dayton, it only lasted, 30, 40 seconds? But still, he was able to kill 9 people. So the FBI has to find a way to get at this before the shooting occurs, or else they're just not going to have a prayer at saving lives.
Well, and then the question is, how do you do that? And if you start to go after people who, especially now that we don't know who buys weapons and who doesn't, right? There really isn't a national database for that on any real level. That if you're seeing somebody who seems to be inflamed on 8chan or 4chan or some other social media or Facebook or whatever, and seems to be saying all kinds of crazy stuff, mm-hmm. but isn't actually doing anything, but it doesn't say, I am now going to go shoot, right? Which is the threat that they can act on. There isn't, even if they don't know where, although in the particular case of the El Paso guy, he did say that 20 minutes before. He did post something that said this act. He referred to the act he was about to, didn't say specifically what the act was, but he called it an act. This act is a result of. And so.
Yeah, he did.
So, I mean, you know, where do you go from there?
I don't know, you know, and I'm not sure the FBI is right. You know, do they have the ability, even if they know, to stop something? Do the laws allow it? Is there a stomach in this country to try and curtail what might need to be curtailed? Does anything need to be curtailed? I think these are just kind of the nagging questions, because law enforcement doesn't have any other ideas at the moment. They've ordered a new mass shooting threat assessment, which again may be a useful tool for the FBI to understand what's what and what's coming. But I'm not sure they have new ideas. But a recent study by the Secret Service found that these kinds of shootings are preventable. They think they can prevent them if they have some better resources to figure out who may be most prone to doing these things and to get them some help before they strike. So they'd like at least the opportunity to try.
Yeah. Well, certainly the data world has figured out a lot of things.
Absolutely.
I mean, they figured out almost all of our behaviors before we do it. That's how we get commercials and ads in our feeds for things that we just mentioned in passing secretly to other people.
No question.
You know, one would imagine that would be possible for them to do as well. But for law enforcement to be able to do, or for those companies, social media companies, to be able to do and then alert federal authorities or local authorities almost, to a potential threat.
Almost in real time, you would think. Just the same way they track you with your ads.
That may be some of it. I mean, but I think the FBI is trying to figure out, you know, first and foremost, how to get a handle on all of this, all these online conspiracy theories, political rhetoric, the overheated discourse in the country. The FBI believes could be making a bad situation worse. Because it is giving people who wouldn't otherwise have access to these kinds of theories, a reason to go do something, a perceived reason anyway to go do something. Now, that's not to say that we're going to be able to put that genie back in the bottle necessarily, but the FBI is hoping that they can tone it down.
Hmm. Eric Katursky, ABC News. Thank you, sir.
See you guys.
All right. Bye, let's check in with Kim Gordon, WGN News. What's coming up at the top of the hour?
Roe, Wall Street suffers its worst drop of the year.
Coming up, Stories That Matter with Kim Gordon in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. All right. William Shatner is going to join us in the 4 o'clock hour, right after the news. We're switching gears here. William Shatner is going to explain why he has my phone number, why he keeps calling me, and who is Kevin. Turns out Kevin's going to be on the phone with William Shatner.
Oh, that'll explain everything, though.
And
finally,
that way we'll have it all worked out.
Has he dialed you since? The accidental dialing, like the pocket dialing thing? Has that continued?
No. This happened a couple of months ago.
I remember.
I'm just walking around, and I get an LA area code on my phone. I figure it's, you know, some cruise ship company trying to get me to buy, you know, a cruise ship itself. You ever hear that where you like you answer the phone and it's a cruise horn? And then when it goes to voicemail, it's William Shatner. And I'm like, why is William Shatner calling me? And there was no really good explanation for when I talked to William Shatner. Turned out there was no really good explanation for it. But we will explain the whole thing coming up after the news, coming your way in 2 minutes.
Kevin, I guess that's you from the way you're answering it. The name is unfamiliar. It's Bill Shatner. I just wanted to apologize once again. You're running off without saying the fondest of farewells. I love you. You're a great guy. And funny and perceptive and talented. Look forward to our mutual success in the chance that it isn't. I would love to continue our relationship. Love you. Bye bye.
Yeah, that was a moment a couple of months ago.
It was
a beautiful spring evening here in Chicago, the only one we had.
I remember that day.
And we I'm walking through the park, and my phone rings with an LA area code. And I'm like, all right, I'm not going to answer it. And then that was the voicemail I got. And then I realized, why is William Shatner calling me?
It was such an odd thing.
Why? And why is he calling me Kevin? These are the questions that I had, and I think they were legitimate questions at the time. And then we realized the next day, Mr. Shatner called me again and was again trying to get a hold of Kevin. And we tried to figure out on the air who could Kevin be.
Right. We were guessing.
We had all these people in Kevin, in Hollywood named Kevin.
Yep.
It turns out
we were wrong.
It was Kevin Burns, and these guys worked together on this program called The Unexplained, which is premiering now, which is a good way to promote the whole thing. But I still do not understand how William Shatner, Bill, how did you get my phone number? Do we have any idea?
Yes, I do. Somebody told me you were a straightforward, good-looking, personable guy that could be trusted with a great deal of money. And I thought, why not talk to this guy? One of the few people that you can trust, that you could call by their first name, whose name is Kevin. Your real name is Kevin, by the way.
You don't know
that. Yes, now it is. If Captain Kirk says it is, it is. I don't know what to do.
The truth of the matter is, my lovely assistant, who's great, somehow put your number down for Kevin Burns. So I'm meeting Kevin Burns essentially for the first, the second, or third time. You know, new relationship. We're starting a show together. It's all very tentative, but Kevin Burns is one of these terrific people. So I'm going to call Kevin and tell him how much I like him and what a great, brave new project we're starting. And I hear this violent voice. What a motherfucker! And I think, Jesus, that's not quite the. I thought this guy was quiet and distinguished and elegant, but apparently not.
Ro, why is your voicemail so yellish and mean?
Hey, it's Ro, leave a message or something.
Why does Kevin Burns have this outrageous voice answering the phone? Probably to scare off actors who want to tell him how good he is. So I got no answer, right? So the next day, something else transpired. I think I lost him in a crowd. We were going to lunch together. So I called him again on the number and said, God, I lost you, but I'll meet you. And again, this violent voice answers the word, what the mother...
And again, it was an honor. The first time you left the message, You didn't leave your name, and I thought, my God, I know this voice from somewhere.
Right, you did say that. You said, wait a minute, there's something here, and you kept playing it for me and playing like, yeah, that does sound familiar.
I know this guy. Who is this guy? He's in Hollywood. And
well,
then it was
it was so embarrassing to leave a message of some intimacy with a total stranger until I realized, what the hell? Who shouldn't know that Kevin Burns is this terrific guy? He's got this terrific show that we're premiering, and why not just go for it?
There you go. Yeah. There's your answer right there. Well, Kevin, we talked when this whole thing came out. You can go. I'm sure this is still up for podcasts. The whole if you just Google William Shatner voicemail, our whole podcast comes up about that. So you'll find out what happened there. But Kevin is the director of this, The Unexplained. And now...
And the producer and the innovator, not only of The Unexplained, but of The Secrets of Oak Island and Ancient Aliens. Both hit shows on the History Channel, where, of course, The Unexplained has premiered, is in its third iteration, and is more popular than the lead-in. So that's all really... really good news.
That is good. That's Friday nights at 9 on the History Channel, Chicago time.
Chicago time, yeah.
Right. What?
That's 10 o'clock elsewhere.
Right, Eastern and Pacific. What?
Right.
Kevin, why don't you explain what this is?
This is the most bizarre situation I've ever found myself in.
Except that one in the hotel that you told me about.
Oh! Yes, but this is like a weird blind date. I mean, you would think this was some kind of a publicity setup, but trust me, it was not. I was totally blindsided, but thank you because, Ro, if it hadn't been for you, I would have never gotten those wonderful messages. And America wouldn't have gotten those messages either, which is more than embarrassing.
It's only in the Chicago area, Kevin. We have to do this again with every major station.
It's all over the place. I've had total strangers tell me that they've heard you profess your undying love for me publicly, and I'm the envy of every trekker.
I'll bet. I will bet that is true because God knows. When he's the most recognizable voice. It took me a little bit, but I finally figured it out. All right, let's talk a little bit more about the show. All right, so what is The Unexplained about?
Kevin, you want to take it first?
It is about those things that we live with every day, that are all around us, that no one, scientists and experts, have never been able to figure out. Weird anomalies of nature, of the world, of the brain, of human behavior, that don't make any sense. Whether or not, bizarre rituals, whether or not they work. Does voodoo work? Do exorcisms work? Life beyond death, people who believe they've had near-death experiences, and the facts behind it, which are incredible. We're finishing up one of the future episodes on incredible survivors, people who have survived death, been the only survivor of a plane crash that wiped out everyone but one person. And why did that person live? Why did somebody live after falling 3 miles out of a plane without a parachute opening? And they lived to tell about it. So it's fact-based. But there are sometimes some very weird theories that we explore, but it's really cool stuff, and we could not have been luckier with the choice of narrator and host, because Mr. Shatner makes everything. He is the secret sauce. He is the spice on top of the hamburger. He makes every story sizzle. Better than we could have ever expected.
I thank you for that. The show also, in my mind, is about the inexplicable in our life. Everything around us is a secret. I mean, looking out into the stars is a whole secret. Looking inside your head is a whole secret. The world around you is so interconnected, and we don't understand it and don't realize it, that strange things happen that would be normal had it were given an explanation, but we poor mortals don't know the answer to so many of the mysteries. We look out into space with our telescopes and our instruments, and we think we're looking at valid things, but what scientists, the cosmologists, know is that 95% of what we're looking at is hidden by dark energy and dark matter. We don't even know what they are. We've given them a name, but we don't know what it is and what it looks like. We're surrounded by mystery that and tantalizes us because it has no explanation. Or
well, and I would also add, you know, this originally started out to be a very different show. That wasn't going to be hosted or narrated, and it was had a different title. And yet, when we, I worked with Mr. Shatner on an Ancient Aliens episode. He was nice enough to participate in our season finale last year, a big two-hour special. And in the conversation we had, I realized that the one thing that he and I both had in common is that we're open-minded skeptics. We're very curious minded. I would say he's got an edge on me, but his curiosity is boundless. And we started kind of riffing on the great questions that we each had about life and the mysteries of life and how the brain works and what happens to us when we die and the things that nobody's ever been able to figure out. And that really became the engine for this show. And it's wonderful when we work with them, and I work with a wonderful team of people, my other executive producers, a fellow Rob O'Brien, who developed the show with me. And but when we're doing the recording of Mr. Shatner's voice, and he's very into the storytelling and the stories and reading the stories and challenging us and making us better, but he'll say, yes, that's right, this is good. Yes, that's what I want to know. And I think if the audience, if people are curious, and thank God we've been on for 3 weeks now, three Fridays so far, and the show keeps doing better and better, and the ratings, the repeats are doing better. It's finding an audience of people that are excited, not only that he's on television in a weekly series, but that they have the same questions we do, and they're finding really cool answers to these mysteries.
So I think a season two is called for. I'm not a History Channel executive, but if I were, based on the metrics you just gave me, I got the green light on. You got William Shatner.
Right.
You got William Shatner. I've got him on my voicemail. You have him on television.
Well, we got our fingers crossed. It looks really good. Yeah, I keep reading things that intrigue me is the word that I love to use. Intriguing things like the medicine man for the Nez Perce tribe approaching Canada in the 1850s, and they slow down because they've got sick and wounded and old, and the medicine man says, "We've got to keep going to get to the Canadian border because I foresee the American army is going to kill us all." But the warriors say, "No, that's way far behind. We can take our time now. We've won." And of course, the medicine man's vision becomes true, and it only reminds you of people who have had premonitions of things, and it becomes absolutely true. What's the explanation of that?
Yeah.
What is the intriguing explanation behind somebody knowing the future and saying it and out loud? It's documented and it comes to pass. How is that possible? Those are the kind of mysteries that we like to explore and try and find the possibility of some explanation.
Wow. All right.
It was fascinating.
I had no idea that we all tripped into this, but this is great that we did.
It is.
I'm very happy about that. All right. If you want to see this, it's on the History Channel, The Unexplained. It's Friday nights, 9 o'clock Chicago time in the Central, 10 o'clock Eastern Pacific, of course. And it is, it's William Shatner. Bill, why did you decide that this was an important project for you? I mean, we understand, obviously, why they wanted you, but why did you decide to do it?
Just what I said. I read a book by, his last name is McFarland, can't think of his first name, called Underground, and wherein he tells us about the caves that can barely be reached, that are black, that have 50,000-year-old paintings on the walls. How did that happen?
Yeah.
Don't you find that stunning and intriguing? And what's the explanation?
I find it stunning and intriguing when I wake up in the morning. So I'm with you on that.
The very fact that you're on the air. How did that happen?
I know. I'm with you.
Or the fact that you called him. Like, pocket dialed him.
Right.
And that it was meant to be.
So you want it. So this is about explaining. It's a great thing. If you are infinitely curious, as a lot of people are, that, you know, you just want to know the answers to things. And no one ever has a sufficient answer. You can go on the internet. You can find a lot of crack pottery. But every once in a while, you know, you want to sit down. You want to watch something that actually explains things. And so that's
the other part of this is we have to accept the fact that everybody wants to know. You either don't know and accept that we'll never know, or you know and you search for the meaning, or there's something in between, almost metaphysical, where you might never know the answer and you have to accept that.
Yeah. Well, that's 90% of everything that's in my brain. William Shatner, thank you so much. Kevin Burns, and again, the show is The Unexplained, 9 o'clock on the History Channel on Friday nights. Watch it. Write the letters to the History Channel and get it renewed for next season, because it sounds like it's quite a thing. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thanks,
thank
guys.
You so much.
All right.
Thank you.
There you go. William Shatner and Kevin Burns. Let's check in now with Kim Gordon. What's going on in the news at the bottom of the hour?
Rose singer R. Kelly facing new charges in Minnesota.
It's a battle of all-star third baseman Bryant Chapman as Oakland invades the friendly confines tonight at 7 on WGN-TV.
I'd say Sox fans have something to root for there as well, as the hatred of Oakland continues on both sides of the city. All right, coming up on the program, speaking of the White Sox, your chance to win family four-pack of tickets to see the Sox take on the Astros on Tuesday the 13th, that's next Tuesday, at 7:10 p.m. Get tickets at whitesox.com or 866-SOX-GAME. Tune in every Monday after 4 for a chance to win a four-pack of tickets to a White Sox game. And these are good tickets, and that's going to be a fun game. Boy, those Astros are pretty good, huh? God, I hate them.
Not a fan?
Not a fan. Never a fan.
No.
I hated it when they had that stupid jersey that looked like you're pulling into a really bad car repair place. That's how much I hate them. I can't even get the words out. Yeah.
They're very good.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yes, they are very good. And they just got better, too.
Yeah, they just got a whole lot better.
You know what? MLB is getting, it's getting like the NBA. They're just getting all the best players on teams. It's like when the Yankees did that. I don't like that.
It's not fair.
No. By the way, I'm really glad, finally last night, I was able to see the Yankees and the Red Sox play on ESPN on Sunday night.
Good.
Yeah. Thank God.
Don't get to see much of them.
Yeah. It's not, you know, you never get to see those two square off on ESPN. How many times a season do those two teams play on Sunday night? And every time it's on Sunday night on ESPN.
What do you see more, them play or anything about LeBron?
Oh, I see. That's true. That's true. And then Tom Brady. And I don't want to talk about that.
Well,
either.
We should, actually. Funny you brought that up. I keep thinking that Kevin's sportscast is incomplete because he has not once told the Tom Brady news yet. I keep listening for it, and I don't hear it.
I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know.
Signs a new contract at the age of, 42?
La, 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 la. I don't know what you're yeah.
Finally don't getting paid what he's worth.
Both of you so angry today on the sports world.
And another thing.
Like I'm listening to Stephen A. yell about stuff. The Astros are the NBA now.
They kind of are. All right, hold on.
All right.
Kim's got the news. And then Kevin's got the sports in the news. Let's stay tuned to find out if he's actually going to talk about that.
Mine will be much more positive.
My guess is no. And then the Bears. What happened to the Bears at Soldier Field? And what was the kicking like? We're going to find out
all
about that right after.
Yeah, that was a walk-off. And did you see who that was on? Oh, no. The other one, that was Anthony on Prince. Yeah, Prince is getting old and slow, so I got him. The other, I forget, Kyle Fuller? Yeah, he picked me off last year, so we're going to play that in the team meeting.
There's our hero, our football hero. He can do no wrong.
He's throwing dimes out there today down at Bourbon A.
That's Matt Nagy. Or do you see Nagy?
I don't know. And we love him just the same.
Adam Hoge is joining us. He's our Bears insider, and he's also the co-creator of the Hogan Johns podcast. And you guys sat down with Matt Nagy, right?
Ryan Pace, the Bears general manager.
Oh, well, that's not what I was told. So that's
all right. No, Pace doesn't do a whole lot of interviews once training camp starts. He likes to have Matt Nagy as the voice of the team during the season, which I understand. The head coach is the one who's talking every day. But, yeah, for the fourth straight year, he took about 25 minutes with us today to talk about the Bears and some of the things that have been going on in camp. So it was good.
Any news and nuggets from Ryan Pace today in your podcast?
You know, so here's the thing about this team. Not to minimize my job at all, but there's not a ton of news with this group this right. year because they're good and we know it. So
well, isn't that news?
And they're healthy.
It is kind of news, and they're healthy, and there haven't been any catastrophic injuries, and hopefully it stays that way.
Oh,
so
God.
For
no,
us,
no, no, why do you even say that?
Don't
why
say it that
say
way.
That? Oh God!
Now you're going to stress Ro out.
Oh,
good job, Adam.
If they're bad, Ro gets stressed. If they're good, he gets stressed because he thinks we're jinxing
them. But you talk
them.
Injuries, and he's definitely going to get stressed.
Well,
that's just how
this,
it is.
I don't think any of the starters are going to play a whole lot in the preseason. So
don't play them at all.
At all.
I'd be fine if they don't play a single snap this preseason. I really would.
I'll be shocked if, like, Khalil Mack plays a snap.
Right.
Absolutely not. Akeem Hicks, why?
Eddie Jackson, why?
Maybe Trubisky could gain some things, but they're not going to run the real plays out there, so what's the point? Anyway, back to with Pace today, a lot of that conversation was about Mitch because there has been this growing, I don't even want to call it anxiety yet, but look, the bottom line is Trubisky has not looked great in camp. He also hasn't looked bad to me at all. He's just sort of been steady and maybe slowly improving, but he's had very few wow moments at the same time. So we talked with Pace a lot today about why that is, and you know what they explained? Is that, you know, sometimes in camp, you try things that you're never going to try in a game. It might sound weird, but you might try to throw in a double coverage on a certain throw just to see if you could actually do it or not. And so if he gets picked off today, like he did, Prince Amukamara got him when he tried to throw in a double coverage to Allen Robinson, you just forget it. You move on to the next play, and sure enough, two plays later, he threw an absolute dart to Allen Robinson, which was probably one of his better throws of camp for a touchdown. So we've been kind of working our way through that with Mitchell Trubisky, and I just would not put too much stock, and I would not stress out too much about Trubisky right now at this point in camp.
What do you mean, put too much stock? What does that mean? Too much stock in what he's going to be like this season, or too much stock in where he is right now in his development?
Yeah, I'm talking about right now. I would not put too much stock in what's happening in these daily practices in camp. There was a few years ago. I don't know if you remember this, but
I don't know how I feel about that.
I know. Remember the year Jay Cutler literally did not throw a single interception?
No.
In camp? I mean, this was like people started tracking this, and he literally made it all the way through Bourbonnais without throwing a single interception. And I think he was terrible that year. So, you know, that what matters much more with Trubisky, and I know people are getting impatient, but what matters is how he shows up when the season starts, when they're running the real offense and they're doing what they really – how they want him to play in the games compared to what his mentality is in practices right now in Bourbonnais. That's a lot of what we talked with Ryan Pace about today on the podcast.
There hasn't been a ton of chatter about David Montgomery, the running back they drafted this year, but he had a highlight reel run today. Bears posted it on their social media where, look, I think Bears fans are going to absolutely fall in love with this guy. He doesn't go down easy. He runs tough. What have you seen from Montgomery? How do you kind of feel about where he's at?
Yeah, and I talked to Sherrick McManus today, who is one of those guys who got run over by Montgomery on that run you're talking about. Look, the players are impressed with this kid. His attitude, he comes in, he doesn't say a whole lot. Last week he was quoted as saying, there's a reason why God gave us two ears and one mouth, because we should do twice as much listening as we do talking. So he's a quiet kid. But he's going to be one of these guys that leads by example on the field. And, the other day on Friday was his first time to really lead by example, literally with his pads, because it was a live portion of practice, which they haven't done a whole lot. But that means that the defense can tackle you for once. And, Sherrick McManus and a couple other guys tried to tackle him. It didn't go very well for them. So that's a great sign for David Montgomery, the rookie. And I talked to Charles London, the Bears running backs coach, today about this. And it actually came up in the interview with Ryan Pace, too. That play got the team going a little bit. The defense has been so far ahead of the offense so far in camp that to see their he's their third-round pick, but it kind of feels like he's their first-round pick this year because he was their first draft pick. To see him finally get an opportunity to run somebody over and do it, and not only run two, but I think he took down three or four guys on that play, it got the whole team going. It got the offense going a little bit, and it was one of those moments in a long training camp that they needed.
Have we talked about the kicker situation yet?
I was just going to say, kicker update, Adam, what do you got?
The elephant in the room.
Well, you know, I hate to say it, guys, but today was the first bad day
for the kicker. Oh, God! What are you doing?
Oh, no!
I'm having a day!
So they were outstanding at Soldier Field the other night.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because I was too busy thinking about other things than that. So what happened at Soldier Field? Did they like it wasn't particularly windy on Saturday night, was it?
No, I mean, it was a nice night, and, you know, I kind of chuckled because last week Eddie Pinheiro said something like, yeah, these are the windiest conditions I've ever kicked in my life, and this wasn't at Soldier Field. This was just in Bourbonnais.
Yeah,
I'm like,
just wait.
No.
Yeah, get ready, buddy.
If this is the worst you've kicked in, you are in for... you were in for some bad times in November and December. But, look, it was our first opportunity to kick in Soldier Field. Eddie Pinheiro especially, he went 12 for 12, including a 60-yarder. Fry had a miss, but they were both pretty good at Soldier Field. So it was that unfortunate they came back to Bourbonnais today, and Pinheiro missed three kicks, and Fry missed two. And there were some ugly ones in there, too, that actually went through the uprights, but they looked pretty ugly. So today was probably the worst day we've seen for the kickers in what has otherwise been a pretty competitive and encouraging competition.
You still think Pinheiro's got the edge right now?
I do, because he has the bigger leg, and that is something you need in the winter months of kicking at Soldier Field. So, but the thing about him is, and I'm definitely not a kicking expert, but they say that Fry is more consistent, and Pinheiro, because he's so new to kicking still, he needs to fix his, you know, he needs to be more consistent with his kicking technique. So as long as he gets consistent, from however they look at it with their kicking coach and, you know, Chris Tabor, the special teams coordinator, I do think he'll end up winning the job because he has the bigger leg.
I love the fact that we're in a situation where they're going, the guy's new. You know, he's new to kicking.
He hasn't really kicked much.
So we got to be a little more patient with him. I know. He had a great career at Florida, right? Played two seasons there, I think, right?
Yeah.
At University of Florida. And then he was a soccer player, which, you know, there's a great history of great kickers that have come from soccer.
There is.
Right, in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to go with it's going to be okay. But I don't know. I don't like
it. You don't sound like you feel like it's going to be okay.
I am going to put on a brave face and just stand here and tell you this.
Yeah, right.
Well, here's the thing, guys. Matt Nagy told us today they're both going to kick Thursday night. And it's a preseason game, and it's at Soldier Field.
And you just kick from anywhere.
So everyone, yeah, I'm down with that. I mean, cross the 40-yard line. Let me see a field goal on first down.
Yeah.
Right.
The starters aren't playing anyway.
Right.
That's what matters most, right?
Uh-huh.
I mean, this preseason, that's what matters most is get everyone healthy and get as many reps for these kickers as possible.
I mean, the second you get a 43-yarder going towards the north end zone.
Get out there, Pinheiro. Let's see what you got.
I don't care what down and distance it is. 43-yard exactly where Cody Parkey was. Let's see what you can do.
It'll be interesting to see how I mean, do you think Nagy's going to kind of have that game plan where it is 4th and 1, manage, let's just kick instead. Let's not even go for it. Let's just get the reps in.
I mean, definitely on 4th down, I did ask him about this in his first press conference in Decatur 2 weeks ago, and he said, I don't think you're going to see us kicking on 3rd down or anything like that. But he also said, you might see some funky play calls. So,
well, they're just going to have some fun with that anyway, because don't they have to, since they're not really playing their starters, and any kind of trickification that they're going to do here in the off season is basically a smokescreen, because you rarely ever see that in the regular season. So, you know, I don't know. The regular season trickification has got to be secret. You got to do that in secret. You got to do that without anybody around. They meet in the middle of the night in a warehouse somewhere with a, you know, a leaky pipe and a swinging light bulb and everything, and then they, you know, and they work on it. That's what goes on in the NFL, isn't it?
I mean, it is crazy secret.
Well, and they have their new facility that hopefully we'll get a chance to look at here the next coming weeks. Once they are back from Bourbonnais, it's going to be the new renovated Hallis Hall, which is twice the size. They have a virtual reality room. So they have all kinds of places now to hide at Hallis Hall to work on these things.
What kind of a virtual reality room do they have? What
so
does that mean?
It's like the width of the field is your standard width, uh-huh. right? But it's only about 15, 20 yards deep, I think, right? So essentially what it is, but then there's board. There's a giant video boards in front of you. So you could just picture Mitch and the offense going through a walkthrough out there. And the board they're looking at in front of them in this giant room and this giant screen could be like the Packers' defense. So Mitch can be in this room with his offensive line in front of him like it's a pre-snap coming out of the huddle. And he can look at what the Packers are doing in front of them and see vision the defense.
Can the virtual reality room simulate a 43-yard field goal attempt in a wild card game against the Eagles at Soldier Field?
Can they blow wind into that room at the right different directions and see how they kick?
Get Pinheiro in there.
There should be a simulator. There should be a kicking simulator somewhere, right? I mean, you go to Golf Tech, and all you do all day long is hit a golf ball on a movie screen, right? Why can't you do that with a football?
Right. Turn the temperature down to 10 degrees and start the wind machine.
Yeah. What about that?
Try that.
Eddie Pinheiro.
Yeah, that sounds a lot better than kicking into that net they kick in.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I once saw a kicker, and I'm trying to forget if this was – I can't remember if this was college or the NFL, but you know how they have the net on the sidelines? It must have been a Northwestern game. I think it was an opponent they were playing because I was on the sidelines. Anyway, the kicker got up to the net like he always does right before he knows he's about to kick a field goal, and he missed the net completely.
That's not good.
Quit while you're behind, buddy. Grab the bench.
I want to rethink this play call here.
Yeah. Exactly. All right. Thank you, Adam. Helping me in any way, shape, or form.
No problem.
Thank
Glad I could help.
All right. Bye-bye. All right. They do play Thursday by the lake. Who they got?
Panthers this week.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Again, it won't be starters against starters.
Yeah, doesn't matter.
Just gives you an opportunity to go out and buy beer. All right, let's check in now with Kim. What's coming up at the top of the hour?
The state may have made some waves for Illinois boaters.
Traffic brought to you by the Illinois Department of Transportation. Yes, it's the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing we can do about either of us right now.
No. Mm-mm.
But what we can do, because we got White Sox baseball coming your way, is this.
It's the top five on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Four, three, two, one.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Get on with it.
Number five.
The president addressed the nation this morning about the mass shootings over the weekend. And he, despite the debate around guns and access to guns, and especially assault-style weapons, the president blamed the internet, the media, video games, and just the individuals responsible.
We must stop the glorification of violence in our society. This includes the gruesome and grisly video games that are now commonplace. It is too easy today for troubled youth to surround themselves with a culture that celebrates violence. We must stop or substantially reduce this, and it has to begin immediately.
Video game mention was a bit surprising and odd. Don't they have video games all over the world?
Yes.
They don't have mass shootings quite like this?
No. And the access, well, in industrialized, wealthy industrialized nations, there are video games everywhere. Right. I mean,
we saw that with the Fortnite championship. We saw those guys from all over the world compete.
Yes. So
not that that's the most violent game, because it's not.
The kids trying to get out of Honduras are not necessarily playing video games. And the issue is, video games have been on people's radar for 20 years. Ever since the single shooter games became very popular 2 decades ago, there's been this argument about what the kids are exposed to. And if you do have somebody who's on the margins of sanity or have some sort of significant adjustment disorder,
right.
And a lot of teenagers do, right? Teenagers have issues with friends and romantic relationships and their parents and all those kinds of things. It's a really pressure-filled moment as they're trying to figure out how to become an adult. that and if they're tipped in a certain direction, certainly the video game may tip them further in that direction.
But so many things could be triggers. You know, a girl dumps you or won't, you know, return your phone calls. I mean, I don't know. You know, that is not necessarily a definitive link.
But access of an 18-year-old or a 19-year-old or a 20-year-old or 22-year-old to a high-capacity assault-style weapon legally is, I think we're putting too much firepower in people's hands. That, and there is a solution here that doesn't actually, if you had a national ID for that style of weapon, if you want a handgun, you can go in your state and whatever the state rules are. Mm-hmm. But for that weapon, it's the same sort of rule they had for machine guns back then. You'd have to have a reason for having it, and you would have to pass a federal background check to get that weapon. That and a 10-day waiting period and all that. That's from a legitimate licensed dealer.
Because in both the Dayton and El Paso shootings over the weekend, they both obtained their weapons legally.
Right. And I think
according to the rules we have right now.
And I think that even the nuttiest of gun nuts would have a hard time arguing against that, other than, you know, the government's out to get them. Right. So, I mean, the paranoiac gun nuts are not, I think we could take that. They vote. That's the issue. That's what scares your congressman. and they vote on that issue. And they are on the NRA email list, and they know exactly who the good guys and the bad guys are in the gun debate. And they're encouraged to reach out to those people by email, and they're given their emails and, you know, other ways of communicating with them. And that's what it is. But it doesn't make for good domestic policy. Good domestic policy. And I'm not trying to take the guns away. I'm not trying to take that style of gun away, even. You know, that's in the argument that, they're just trying to take that away. I'll tell you, you know what the truth is, though?
Hmm.
You know what the United States and Russia and China and big players on the world stage have done when they want to destabilize littler countries so they can either topple them or adjust their regimes or whatever it is? Because it happens all the time throughout history. All I have to do is read the history books. I'm not making it up. And you don't have to be a paranoiac nut to believe this and to know this. Is you flood it with weapons. You flood it with small arms. And it starts to take care of itself. It destabilizes.
Yeah.
Right? The south and west side of the city flooded with small arms. Is it stable? No. And this whole idea of everybody had a gun, we'd all be safe, is absolute horse crap. And you know it, and we know it. There's concealed carry, there's open carry in Ohio. Right? And there were cops there. And yes, that's true. In 30 seconds, that gunman was dispatched on Saturday night. But not before he got 41 rounds off, killing 9 people and injuring another 24.
So remarkable about that situation. In that case, the officers got to him so quickly. He barely had his weapon out. Like you say, not even a minute. And yet was able to do that kind of deadly damage and kill that many people, take that many people's lives.
Checking in at
number 4.
All right, Lightfoot reacted to this weekend's mass shootings. Also, very, very bad weekend here in Chicago. But this is what she had to say about the president's reaction.
As a leader of our country, I implore the president to set a better, clearer moral tone. Because what he's been doing is blowing every racist, xenophobic dog whistle. And when you do that, when you blow that kind of dog whistle, animals come out. So what I would like to see him do is to set a different moral frame that provides for people to be able to come together.
You know what's funny about that? You hear that argument a lot. That, you know, why doesn't he just tamp down the rhetoric? Right? You hear that even from a lot of Republicans.
You do.
Because he's afraid he's going to lose if he does that. What does that say about how he believes America to be? What does that say about his opinion about us? About us writ large, us as a country? I mean, that's a pretty scary thing. All right. It's also scary what's happening here in the streets of Chicago. We'll get to that tomorrow. But we got to some of that earlier today.
Right, playing the sound of gunfire in, was it the Lawndale neighborhood? West Lawndale earlier just sounded like a war zone.
Let's just do that here because we, you know, you heard the gunshots. You heard audio of the gunshots in San Antonio and in Dayton.
El Paso.
Over the weekend. Did I say San Antonio?
You did.
I'm like the president.
You're like the president.
And
Joe
Biden.
Yes. Michigan.
In El Paso. Thank you. God. You heard the sounds of the gunfire from those two mass shootings.
You did.
Weekend, right? Scary, right?
Scary.
Horrifying. You're like, oh my God, who would want to live through that? This is what it sounded like this weekend and on many weekends in the summer in Chicago, Saturday night.
Chilling.
That audio is from the Chicago Police Department, if you think we're making that up or trying to be dramatic about it. We'll get to your three, your two, and your one, but first, let's check in with Kim. What's coming up at the bottom of the hour?
In the wake of the mass shooting, Senator Durbin pushing for the Senate to pass his Domestic Terror Act.
Watch for Chicago's very own stories with Micah and Joe, Micah Mater and Joe Donlin, weeknights on WGN TV News at 9 o'clock.
Top 5 continues.
Number 3.
Doesn't get weirder than this. Kevin Spacey came out of hiding.
Mm-hmm.
Because a sexual assault allegation of him has been dropped. Right? So now he figures he's free and clear and able to go out and...
He still has more than a dozen other accusers, but okay, this one.
Yeah, but the big one that was in court got dropped.
That's right.
So he resurfaced. To recite a poem in Rome next to a sculpture.
Perhaps you're right. The more you're wounded, the greater you are, and the more empty you are. They used me for their entertainment, fed on shoddy stuff. Life was over in a moment. It was always like this. I fought. I looked for an edge, a dawn where I could start again. I have endured no end of sleepless nights. I have spent hours and hours sweating to destroy and fall.
President Underwood, right there.
Art imitating life.
Wow. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's going to end well. Not exactly sure if I am... I don't know. Does he have family? Does he have anybody that
loves him?
Concerns themselves with him?
Why? Because you'd say that wasn't a good thing to do?
I would say that I'd be calling medical assistance at this point. Okay. Moving along to... Here we go.
Number 2.
Oh, Sandy, baby.
Oh.
Olivia
Newton-John is auctioning off items from her decades-long career to raise money for cancer research and wellness center in her native Australia, including the iconic skin-tight black pants and leather jacket she wore in Greece.
Who can forget?
She says it was a tough decision, but not that tough when you think about what the money's going for.
I've worn them, and that was another part of my life, and now it can go to good use, and someone can enjoy them, and I'm hoping it'll end up in a museum somewhere so that people can see them, you know, in the future. But if not, a billionaire from China who wants it for his granddaughter, that's fine, too. Whatever, whoever wants to get them and get money for my center, I'll be very happy.
Yeah.
She's saying she doesn't care. She wants to put the money for the cancer survivors and people battling cancer.
Yeah, Chinese billionaire is not getting it for his granddaughter.
You just don't have to ask the question, like, what it's for, right? I mean, you just don't need to. You don't need to know.
Just saying.
Number 1.
Some Uber or Lyft drivers offer water or snacks to passengers, but one New York couple who requested a ride to a hospital got much more. When their baby unexpectedly arrived in the back seat, thanks in part to the coaching from their driver.
Oh, she's literally
coming out.
Yeah, but you have to breathe.
Oh, my head is in my hand.
Just don't get the seat messy. Oh my gosh! I was going to say
$50 charge.
Yeah, what kind of charge is that? I mean, puke is one thing. I mean, all of that.
You do get a bill for these things sometimes.
Tried to hold the placenta in. That's another $50.
Coaching? I mean, he was pretty good.
Oh man,
he's pretty good in a crisis like that.
Oh
yeah, could have been a lot worse.
Oh
yeah,
I will never get in another Uber without thinking about this.
I know you won't.
That's pretty impressive.
Is there a baby upcharge?
What if it was a shared ride?
Oh, gee.
And then what do you do with the tip at the end? You know, is that guy going to get the 5 stars?
Five stars, $5 tip.
Well, if it's a boy,
might name it after name the child after the Uber driver.
Okay, good luck with that. Mm-hmm. All right, let's close this thing up, shall we? We got the news and then White Sox baseball.
Mm-hmm.
The top five at five.